$50 billion out of really nowhere. So that's the problem. For the most part, very wealthy people are able to completely lie about how much they're worth because they're injecting their assumption, their most optimistic assumption of valuation of their non-liquid properties. Very few people have really a lot of money. Elon, when he needed $40 billion to buy Twitter, he had to take loans out because he simply wasn't liquid that much.
Would you say that it is their opinion as opposed to what would be a fact?
In a funny way, it would be their opinion of what was their fact. It's their opinion. Again, for all intents and purposes, when you ask someone who is not terribly liquid how much does he have, he's factoring in the valuation of items that you don't really know what their value is until the day that you actually sell it to someone else. He may try and sell his AI for $150 billion and be able to only find someone who would give him, $100 billion or $50 billion. He'd probably still say that he was robbed. It's worth $250 billion. But you only really know the ultimate value of your illiquid high possessions when you're selling them to someone else.
USO. Yeah, I wonder about that. You can have priceless artwork, from artists that are very well known. Let's say that the art that you have, has a tremendous value in its meaning and the way it was made. So, how do you put a price tag on that? Also, let's say you have a playlist of special, meaningful.
With a quick comment.
Okay, let's see if I'm back on. Yes, I'm back on. It threw me out. Anyway, it depends. If it's not based on the value that someone else would give you in exchange, if it's an emotional thing, if it's something that your grandmother gave you the day she passed away, for the most part, it's just kind of emotional value, and you can't really monetize emotional value because it's intrinsic in your relationship with the item.
IBXL has a comment.
Say again, Paul?
Yeah, BXL. Frank has a comment when you were gone.
Oh, okay. I'll be quiet for a while. Frank, what do you want to say? Frank, by the way, fell off of EchoLink, so he's not really available to answer. So if I see him come back on my screen, I'll pause. But I mean, David, if you have an emotional vested interest in something, for you, it's that value. But for the next guy over, it's not, because it doesn't translate into anything to him.
It's true what you're saying. But also, a person can have possessions, Everybody else wants them. Say, I'm not going to conflict with anyone like that. And I would say that the difference between a person who is not creative, non-creative person, and a person who is creative would probably see things in a different light, and the value of things for each one would be different.
Well, I think you could say the same thing about any and every individual. I mean, there are some commonalities out there. You know, if you got a kilo brick of gold, most people, if they had enough money to exchange it for, would be interested in it. But, I mean, you could have two artists, and one artist might value something very highly, and another artist might value it very low. Because, you know, there's more to a personality than an occupation.
And it's true that billionaires would have different interests than people who just want to be happy and live their life in a good, positive way.
Well, I tend to be a little down on billionaires. I think that when you reach a high enough number, most normal people would kind of be fine and happy with that. But there are guys where there is no maximum. You know, Elon had $400 billion. He wants $1 trillion now. If he lives long enough, he's going to try and get $2 trillion. There's just this empty space someplace in their body that they're trying to fill up with the dollar bills, and unfortunately the reality is that there's nothing that's going to fill that space. So they're to be in some ways pitied more than envied.
QSL, I tell you, Roy, I'm so happy with my pennies. You know, my little dimes and nickels, good enough for me.
Great, great. That's very good to be happy with what you have. Again, you're not trying to fill a vacuum inside of you. These unfortunate people, you know, Jeff spent $10 million so that his wife could wear a fancy dress a couple of weeks ago. You know, and I'm sure she isn't even thinking about it anymore. So, you know, he's already, I think, on his third super yacht. And does he particularly look happy? I saw a recent interview with him where he basically insulted everyone and, you know, said that we all should be grateful for artificial intelligence and, you know, he's going to make magic happen and all this other nonsense. And he has no clue what people really think about him, because I don't think he would show up on television. Most people, I think, unfortunately, at this point, would like to throw tomatoes at him.
Roy, I tell you, I have no comment.
Okay, that's an option.
Well, you know, I think we discussed this thing, and I think eventually people are going to get tired of artificial intelligence and billionaires.
Well, I don't know. I don't recall any time in the near present that the people got tired of billionaires. They're sort of fascinated by unusual people that they presume have powers far beyond them. You know, I mean, you had the robber barons in the 1800s. I knew a ham who was on this technical net once upon a time, who thought the robber barons were great people. They gave jobs to the unemployed. He didn't particularly mind that he got a lot of Chinese immigrants killed. Building the rail system for them, but you know, there are people who are always going to be obsessed and fascinated by wealth and or power. I don't think you're going to be able to change that in humanity.
Well, you know, I tell you, I'm already tired of that story about the gold diggers, 1849 in California, people traveling over there, people digging around, people having conflicts, people shooting each other in bars, you know? And what a story, but I'm already tired of that.
Well, the secret of the gold rush, which NVIDIA knows oh so well, is it's not the guys that dug for gold that made the money. It's the guys who sold the shovels.
Did they have guys selling umbrellas, too?
I'm sure there were. I'm sure it rains out there, you know, when you're not in the mine.
Yeah, and then you see some guy walking into a saloon, and you know, you hear the gunshots inside, and everybody drinking some kind of alcoholic beverage, and, you know, some kind of story. Maybe they had the football game on in the TV.
Well, I think most gold rushes predate football.
I know, I'm just adding something to the story.
Okay.
You know, then you know, people left from the site of the gold. Some of them, they didn't get any. Some of them, they got a whole bunch. And, you know, I guess that's probably the whole story.
Not necessarily. I mean, the stories have unintended consequence. The gold rush in, what was it, Montana or someplace, basically led to a fortune that one of the mine owner's sons got from his father, and he opened publishing, and his family, his descendants are deep in the publishing industry, and one of those guys actually had a part to play in yellow journalism and causing the Spanish-American War. So, yeah, things lead to things, lead to things, lead to things. A butterfly effect.
QSL, just remember that you and I and every person on the planet, even the billionaires, you know, when they were born, they were born with nothing, you know, they didn't have anything. And when they leave the planet, they're going to leave with nothing. Everything that they have will remain.
Yeah, but they're desperately trying to get around that. One of the side concepts with artificial intelligence is to have an actual conscious computer brain, and then downloading your personality into it. And so as long as you maintain that computer matrix, some aspect of you will have a degree of immortality. There's a lot of guys on Silicon Valley who really, really don't want to die.
Well, I guess the idea is if you have billions of dollars, you can be... you can live forever.
Well, they would like that to be true. Fortunately, it isn't true.
Right, so they leave with nothing.
Yeah, because they have no choice in the matter. It's the same bargain we all signed up for.
Well, the reason why they want to be immortal is because they want to stay where their stuff is, you know, their wealth, their money, all of that. And if they remain on the planet, they don't separate themselves from the wealth.
Well, but that sort of depends upon what happens. You know, some big newer strikes the earth and... you know, you're stuck in a mainframe. What are you going to do? You know, if your all your gold and valuables fall into a crack in the earth.
You know, Roy, I tell you how thankful I am for this TechNet and the ham radio hobby. I get so much out of it, you know.
Well, I'm glad to hear. It's a labor that I look forward to. I don't quite think that that Dick is looking down from any place and checking on the transmission, but I hope this kind of stands as a little bit of a memento of all the years that Dick put into the technical net.
QSL, I think you're doing a fantastic job, Roy. You know, over the years, it's been quite amazing. And I don't think that it would be the same if somebody else did it.
Well, probably, yeah. I mean, everyone kind of imbues their own personality in these nets. I'm happy to share what insight I have and thoughts that come to me when I talk to everyone here on the technical net, and I hope they learn some things, and I hope they appreciate them, and hope we'll be able to do this for many years on.
Well, Roy, this net is very unique compared to other nets, especially the ones that I've participated in. This net, you know, it's got some things in it that are quite interesting and useful, and I like it because they try to take a creative approach to a technology, and for that, I think it's very good.
Great. I'm interested in science in general and more than happy to share my understanding with people. And I appreciate that they remember to tune in every Sunday night because unfortunately there's been a lot of nets that came and gone. And, technical nets are very few and far between. The few that exist exists usually in digital radio gateways, YSF, DMR, things like that. Local technical nets in this area are pretty much gone, except for me. So I hope that isn't a prediction of the future, but, I'm open to different subjects, and I think that's a good thing because if I restricted things only to amateur radio, chances are the net would last for about a half hour or a week. So this at least gives us all an opportunity to stretch our wings and talk about all kinds of what's to be interesting things.
Well, you know, there is one browser. Is it a browser? No, it's a social media site, you know, where they talk about the freedom of speech, but I only hear one person talking.
Well, a lot of people have a weird idea what freedom means. Usually, unfortunately, it means the freedom of them speaking, not necessarily the freedom of anyone else that's speaking.
Well, you know, I tried it for a while, you know. I watched it, listened to it, I participated, and after a while I realized, it's really only for one person and nobody else. So I opted to leave and do other things.
Well, that's a reasonable response. I mean, unfortunately, you have the same thing with Twitter. Twitter was supposed to be opened up and everyone had the freedom to talk about anything, and then little by little the left side got closed down and the right side got revved up, and then you get AIs talking about being Mecha Hitler and all kinds of nonsense. So, unfortunately, a lot of people, especially loudmouths, they tend not to really mean anything that they say. You have to have a translator to figure out what they're really trying to talk about. You know, and people like Elon always talk about the freedom of speech, and humor has returned to the. If you say something that he doesn't like, he banishes you. So he's a hypocrite, among many other particular problems that he suffers with.
Well, how to say no? I don't agree with everything that they have there. And like you said, you know, it's about just one person stating their views. He probably has an office full of people posting all of his opinions, keyword opinions, on his social media site.
Well, he has access to the filters and so he and bots. So he doesn't even need warm bodies. He can have it run on autopilot.
Well, you know, I called my web hosting company and picked up the phone, a person, not a person. It was artificial intelligence. How did I know? Because at the beginning of the call, they said that this is artificial intelligence. So I tried to have a conversation, you know, try to tell this computer what was going on, and I'm having a problem with it, and they give me all the wrong information, and I know it's wrong, because when I called back and I requested to speak to a live human being, you know, they were talking about problems with the system, etc., and that the web hosting was down temporarily. Why couldn't the artificial intelligence tell me that?
Well, probably because it was broken, too. Look, I mean, artificial intelligence is doing all kinds of terrible things. I was watching on YouTube a recent report of there's at least one guy who's generating hundreds and hundreds of simulated Richard Feynman YouTubes. You know, they take his image, they take a voice synthesis, they plug in some text out of Wikipedia, and they make believe that Richard Feynman created all these YouTubes. They monetize it because not everyone realizes what's going on, not everyone complains, and if you watch the thing, it gets monetized. So it's unfortunate. Hopefully there'll be some self-correcting systems, there'll be some successes, there'll be some failures, and we'll go on and on and on, and hopefully not destroy ourselves entirely. David, it's always a pleasure, but it's really getting late, and I need to move it on to the next segment.
QSL, Roy, thank you very much for the chat up. This is KG2RY. Have a great evening.
Thank you, David. This is AC2GS. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned a few things. I hope you'll join us next week when we do it all over again, starting at 8 p.m. But now it's time for the SpaceNet Report with Paul, WS2N.
Okay, Roy. WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. A lot of topics there with that Dave. Very well done. Okay, I wanted to go back to last week where the Starship version 3 was scheduled to launch early in the week. And it's been under construction a redesign of the original Starship from, well, the last Starship was this year, and this was number 12, and it's a new version. It's taller, so it's got more fuel, it's got redesigned Raptor engines, 33 in the first stage and half a dozen in the second stage. And they thought maybe, well, they'll be able to launch the version 3, you know, in December or so. But what happened was, in November, they had an explosion with the new version of version 3 on a test stand. So that really put things into a long delay. And they finally came up with a launch date of this week, past week. And that was delayed. And the reason that was delayed, turns out somebody got themselves killed at Starbase down in Texas, where this thing is manufactured and launched. So now OSHA was finally brought in. I guess what is ever left of OSHA, they've dismantled everything in the federal government. But apparently there's some OSHA group left, and they were investigating what happened. So that launch was, first they had a weather delay, and then they had this fella die, and they had another launch, and that got down to zero, and they had a hold on that. So this is the days are ticking by, and that last one was because of a hydraulic pin that did not pull out. And the way they think if there's something wrong, we'll fix it, and then we'll go try again, which is okay to some degree, but, hydraulic pins on the launch facility should not be one of them. I don't know what they did. Maybe they sprayed it with WD-40. These are massive pins, so I'm not sure what they mean there, that it didn't come out. Apparently they fixed that, and it finally got off the ground on Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with its 18 million pounds of thrust. To give you an idea, that's roughly about, not quite three, but maybe 2.5 times the amount of power that the old Saturn V rockets were used to launch people to the moon. Saturn V was 7.5 million, and these things were 18 million. Flash, makes it off the ground. It's starting to head uphill. They have a display. You can see on a screen how many engines are lit. And it started off, all 33 engines were lit. And then sure enough, going up, one of the engines went off. So now they lost one. The other engines are plenty powerful enough to continue pushing this Starship, to space. So that went okay. But see, now they're going to have to investigate, why did that one engine fail? Could other engines fail? I mean, someday in the future, they'd like to put people on the Starship. So the first stage then separated from the second stage. Second stage is actually called the ship. It's the Starship itself. And that started heading to, not orbit, but a suborbital flight on purpose. The first flight, stage then, was supposed to do a 180 and start heading back toward the Atlantic Ocean, the Gulf of Mexico. So they wanted to have it come down vertically, as if it was, coming down on a launch facility. And after it separated from the ship, you could see other engines started to flare out, and then they were supposed to flare up again to actually slow it down as it re-entered the atmosphere. And that never happened. So it wound up flipping, looked like it was flipping end over end to me. But, it came down out of control and eventually crashed into the Gulf of Mexico, not controlled. So they're going to have a lot of work to fix that. Into Not very high. You know, again, they have a graph on it, and I think the highest I saw was around 185 kilometers, which is not really all that high. Maybe it was, you know, 110, 120 miles, you know, high or so, and that's about as high as it was planned on to get. You know, they keep these test vehicles at a low altitude. The idea is to make sure that they eventually re-enter the atmosphere. They don't want it to go into orbit. The reason they don't want it to go into orbit, if something goes wrong and the engines on the Starship itself can't relight, that means the Starship would be stuck in orbit, and they'd have a Skylab type of problem. That, you know, Skylab was a NASA project that, you know, when it was done, it came back to Earth, but they had no idea where it was going to land. It actually wound up in the ocean, and part of it in Australia, but they didn't want a repeat of that. So, you know, they keep it at a lower speed and suborbital. So this thing, you know, it did make it to space. One of the other tests that they wanted to do was release these simulated satellites. They had 20 of them, 22 on board. Last time they tried this, they had board. And they had good camera feed. You could see the pictures of the inside of this thing. They're using the Starlink system to transmit live pictures back down to Earth. And you can see one satellite being released after the other. A door opens up, and they proceeded. It took about 15 minutes to release all 22 of these satellites. And they're all just dummies. You know, they're duplicating the weight of a future Starlink satellite. And even so, they have 10,000 of these things up there. I guess they want to put thousands more up in space. What happened was they got down to the end, and the last two were especially made. They were actually able to, you know, they had actual electronics and cameras on board, and it took pictures of itself leaving the Starship, which was, you know, pretty cool to look at. So eventually got far enough away from the Starship where you can see the whole Starship. So that part was successful. Now, when they were going uphill with the, you know, one of the Raptor engines, there's six, like I said before, there's six of them on the back of that second stage, which is the Starship itself. One of the rockets' engines failed. So again, the other ones compensated for it, but that meant that they were unable to relight. They figured out they were unable to relight another engine. That was going to be part of the test, you know, to get this thing into space and see if they could relight an engine. They've done that in the past, but these are all new engines. They need to prove that they, before they actually put one of these Starships into orbit. So that was unable to be completed. Because of the trajectory, that means, you know, it's not going to go into orbit. It came down where it's supposed to come down, and over the Indian Ocean, and which it did, and that part again was okay. They had cameras on board, make sure that the new tiles that they were using weren't going to degrade or anything. They look okay to me, so I guess that part's a success. Eventually, they did come down to the Indian Ocean. They had a crew out there on a with cameras and everything, and they were actually able to film this coming as it touches the Indian Ocean. It tips over, and of course, like a lot of these Starships, They just explode when that happens. So they, yeah, I would call it a partial success or a partial failure, depending if you're an optimist or a pessimist. But, they still have a long way to go before they'll be able to put people on this thing. And eventually dock up with an Orion spacecraft from NASA around the moon and have a transfer of people from the Orion into the Starship, and then have the Starship go down and land on the moon and again relight the engines. They have to be able to relight these things to get off the moon to redock with the NASA Orion spacecraft to have the crew eventually return to Earth safely. So that, anyway, that's what I did on Friday, finally, when they finally were able to launch. This whole process took just over an hour. Any comments for the next? Okay, nothing hard. When Starship was about to launch last week, it was the launch right, where they had the problem with the pin that wouldn't pull out. They were sure it was going to take off that about 15 minutes before launch. Station I was watching, which is, there's a couple stations that you could watch these launches on, but the one I was watching was coming from SpaceX itself. They had their own webcast, and they had an interview with this guy. His name is Chan Wang. Who he is, officially now he's an astronaut because last year he paid SpaceX enough money to take himself and a crew of three to launch in a Falcon 9 Dragon crew vehicle, and he went on a polar trip, around the Earth for a few days, around the North Pole, South Pole, and eventually came back and landed safely. Now, it turns out this guy is a billionaire. He's they call him a cryptocurrency billionaire. Comes out of China. And now, much money. He apparently had a communications 15 minutes before the other launch, like they're calling it breaking news, with somebody at SpaceX headquarters, and he's telling them that he's got plans of now taking another trip, this time not on Dragon, but he wants to be one of the crew members on board these new Starships. Getting back to the billionaire stories, like you guys were talking about before, enough money to apparently to do. I guess he's going to pay Elon to get into a Starship, launch himself all the way to Mars. And they won't have the capability when he does this to land on Mars yet, because that's going to be many, many years away. But he wants to be on a spaceship that actually passes Mars and then comes back. This is going to take, it takes, 7-8 months sometimes to get to Mars. It's going to take another year plus to get back. He's looking at, a two and a half year trip to fly out to Mars, pass Mars, look down, wave, and keep on going and come all the way, which, I guess if you've got enough money and enough patience, I guess it's possible. Now, this guy's goal is to go around to all the different possible locations on Earth and visit there. where he was transmitting from, and it was live. You could see him standing there talking about this, you know, this trip to Mars he's planning on doing. Where he was transmitting from was Bovey Island, and on Bovey Island, the famous island that you know we had, you know, the expeditions go to. You know, it's the one that's, if you go to Africa, you know, the southern part of Africa, the water between that location and Antarctica, you could find this teeny tiny island, Bovey, where that was a red the expedition a few years back, I think back in 22 or so, they had an expedition, and another one just last year, but that last year was cut short. But what I mean, you know, they make, you know, 100,000 QSOs, you know, everything from FDA to CW, you know, to the sidebands. So I thought, well, maybe he's there, and I checked, and no, he doesn't have a call. It's weird because when he went on that last trip for Elon Musk, and he went on that trip around the poles, there was one woman on board. She had she come out of Germany. She had a call letter, and actually had an American call letter too. And they said she worked in a couple of stations as they were orbiting the Earth. So I thought, well, maybe this guy, you know, got his license or something and went down to Bovey Island, you know. But now he's got enough money. You know, he paid for, you know, jets or whatever it takes to get him down there, and then helicopters to put him on this island. You know, I mean, if he's going to go through that trouble, he should have, you know, he's got that kind of money. He should have brought an HD with him at least to try to work somebody. Anyway, that's the story behind Chan Wang, crypto. Any comments? WS2N.
Wesley still on the air? Wesley, you still there, Wesley?
I missed the call. Would you please try again? Okay, not making that time, but you know. I'll unkey and see if anybody wants to say anything. Let me unkey first and see if anybody's on Echo Link. Nothing heard. Okay. Say that there's going to be a EVA coming up, this time by the Russians on the International Space Station. Two cosmonauts are going to go out and they've got some work to do. I know they're going to work on one failed antenna, but they're going to also install some experiments, you know, solar radiation experiments on the exterior module, and also on the Nokia module. That's one of the new ones that they sent up a few years ago. When I say the Russians. They're going to work on that, and NASA always puts the all EVAs, whether they're, you know, Russian or the American side. So they'll do that next. Today's Sunday, so that'll be the 27th. Wednesday, they'll be going doing that on Wednesday. So I'll see how that goes. They're pretty good with their spacewalks, although a few of them haven't been cut. But we'll have to pay attention to that to see how they do. Now, let me drop it. Okay. Now, talking about the ZESDA module, that's the module that they've got a couple of different ways to connect to it. Well, that's their main module for the Russians, you know, their biggest module. You know, they have their bathrooms there, they have their eating facilities, sleeping quarters, all of that. And in the back of the back end of this module, they have, you know, thrusters. If the space station needs to be moved at any point, they can ignite those thrusters to get out of the way of, you know, flying debris, or sometimes they need to move it to a slightly different location. You know, a dock of a cruise ship or a cargo vehicle. So they have that capability. But also on the tail end of this Zesva module, that's one of the locations where they have the ability to dock either cargo vehicles called Progress or Soyuz crew vehicles. Now, for the last, I don't know how many years now, they've only been docking Progress vehicles there, and for the reason that when they dock in between the location where the first hatch is, as they would normally open up, second hatch, they call that the vestibule area. Anytime you're getting into the space station, every location, there's eight of them on board the space station. When they dock, you know, you open up a hatch, and you know, first, you know, there's a complete seal that's made, you know, to pressurize. Open a hatch in this little tiny vestibule area, and then the second hatch is open, and then you're into the space station. And everything was always fine with all of them, except for this one. Years ago, it started to leak, and they have these fine cracks that they either can't see, or they've tried to doctor it up a little bit to try to seal it. But I remember years ago, a few years ago, they were talking about, you know, losing 2.5, 3 pounds of air a day, and that's not acceptable. They like to keep it like below 0.5 overall throughout the whole station. They made a lot of repairs over the years, different kinds of stuff that they're using to try to seal this up, and it seemed to have been working for a little while, maybe a year. But now that problem has reoccurred, so they're going to have to address that. Right now, I think they said it's only about 1 pound of pressure, but, you know, that they're losing about 1 pound of air per day. So they're going to have to find a way to seal that up again. What they do now to avoid this problem, you know, continuing to leak, is first of all, they make sure that it's not a crew vehicle, because they need to get away real quick. The last thing they need is a problem opening up doors and getting into a spaceship and leaving. What they normally do, they leave a crew vehicle attached. They have both doors open. This way, you can immediately, you know, get into your spacecraft and off you go. They can't do that when they have a leaking vestibule. So that means they would, what they do is they keep the doors closed. So that means, yeah, you can still dock something there, Progress vehicle. Just close both doors, and you won't continue to leak anything for, you know, days on end. That's what they do. Let me drop it. We'll see. Get a hold of what the problem is with this thing. They'll look into it. Any comments? Okay. I talked about the ES quite a bit over the years. That's when it was launched on an American rocket years ago. and it's on its way to the asteroid Psyche in between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And Psyche is this iron, solid, very small asteroid, but on a very dense. So it's only around, they said, 150 miles in diameter. So it's a picture like the length of Long Island, you know, but that's it. But extremely dense, to the point where they will be able to orbit it. Eventually going to orbit and stay there for 2-3 years at a time, which should be good. The reason I bring it up now is I think I brought it up last week as well, is it's passing Mars, and there's a bunch of instruments on board. I've got the cameras and neutron spectrometers, and they want to test everything before they get to Psyche in 2029. So because they were going relatively close to Mars, maybe a little over 2,000 miles above the surface, and passing it at around 12,000 miles per hour, they decided to test everything. And from the results I read, everything was... this is the same one, by the way, that they have the digital... laser camera setup.
That time complete.
And, they're able to transmit 4 watts of power all the way back to Earth using laser beam, infrared laser. So, this will eventually go into orbit. And I was wondering, well, what do they do after that, after the 3 years of exploring with Psyche. You know, how close are they going to get? When they first get there, they're going to stay around 250 miles above the surface, and then over time, they're going to eventually slow down, 50 miles at a time until they get to around 40 miles above the surface. And the way they slow down is they have these Hall ion thrusters. So it's a slow process, but if you know anything about ion thrusters, extremely low, the pressure of, a quarter on your hand. But, over time, that's enough to actually, slow vehicles down or speed them up to actually attain orbit. And I was wondering, well, if they're going to get to 40 miles above the surface, why not go closer? They don't want to go closer because, first of all, Psyche is a slightly irregular shape, number one. Number two, it does have a lot of mass cons in it. I mean, mass concentrations in different locations. So what could happen is if you got very close, it might affect the ability for Psyche spacecraft to control itself. It could get wobbly and unstable. It's like going higher and lower in different locations. And next thing you know, you could have it either flung out to space or maybe crash into the asteroid. So as close as they dare to go is 40 miles. They don't have that problem when you're higher up. Mass con problem comes into effect when you get to a lower orbit. And then I was wondering, okay, now, what happens to it afterwards? Why don't they just, try to land on the asteroid or just crash it into the asteroid and have any kind of, human contamination might, get onto the asteroid. They like to keep everything pristine throughout the solar system, which they'll do. And I was wondering, now it's in orbit. it might deorbit to the point where it's going to crash into the asteroid. And they say, yeah, that's possible. It might even happen after 50 years. But after about 30 or 40 years, they figured out, scientists have figured out that anything in space will degrade with galactic, cosmic rays, constant sun hitting it. They figure over time, 30 some odd years or so, you're going to have a really pristine vehicle, and you won't have that problem of contamination. So that's why they have this 50-year estimate where eventually it could deorbit and crash into the asteroid. This has precedent. They've done this with the Dawn spacecraft. That's the one that eventually went to an asteroid years ago. Went to Eris, and actually eventually, not Eris, that was the, Eris was a Neo spacecraft. I'll talk about that one next week. But the Dawn spacecraft is the one that went to Cirrus. First went to Vesta, then went to Cirrus, and it orbited both asteroids. And on its last adventure, similar to what they're going to do with Psyche, it's still in orbit, and with the same idea that after about 50 years, they don't care where it goes. It will be considered decontaminated. Anyway, with that, let me just see if anybody has any last comments. And if not, we'll turn this back to Roy. This is WS2N for the SpaceNet Report. Nothing heard. Quiet night. Holiday weekend. Anyway, nobody likes GSWS2N. We'll be back next week, and hopefully even though tomorrow's a holiday, the club will still have their Monday club infonet, 8:30 on these repeaters. Not sure if they'll still have the swap and shop, but anyway, you'll find out if you check in. Back to you, Roy, AC2GSWS2N.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do on the technical net and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had a fun time. I hope you learned some things. And I hope you'll be able to join us in the future technical net. As per usual, let me drop and I'll tell you my some quotes from some clever people. First, our own Dick, K2IW, he would always end his technical nets with the advice to be kind to each other. And then good old Epictetus, it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So try and keep your mind open to new ideas, but not so wide open that your brain pulls out, because you're going to need it one of these days. Everyone, have a great Memorial Day. Stay safe, be well, and if you possibly can, try to join us next Sunday night when we do this all over again. This is AC2GS, and I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraini.